Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November 20th, 2007 Carborough Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. Before we begin our formal agenda, thank you. I wanted to read an article that was published a couple years ago from the Raleigh News and Observer. You don't need hands to give your fellow man a hand up. Marty Ravlett's life is proof of that. Born without arms, the 64-year-old landscaper is something of a living legend around Chapel Hill and Carborough. He awes and inspires and definitely shocks as he goes about those towns planting shrubs, mowing grass, and blowing leaves using his neck, chest, and feet. Ravlett says he likes having such a visible profile because he knows that people see hope and possibilities when they witness a disabled man enabling himself. And as an aside, I'll say, if there was ever anybody who proved that disabled is an inappropriate word, it was him. To bolster his case, Ravlett carries with him a copy of an essay written by a man who suffered great financial loss and was driving through Chapel Hill considering suicide. But, the essay says, when the man spotted Ravlett out mowing grass on a blistering hot summer day, the man realized that he, too, could survive. That type of testimonial has fueled Ravlett's life with meaning and purpose. I feel that this is part of what I should give back to America, he said. America has given so much to me. I feel that with the attitude I have and the work that I do, I am paying that debt. Ravlett's giving extends far beyond his job. He garnered national attention on the Rosie O'Donnell show in 1998 after he rescued a woman from a burning car on US 15501 in Durham by kicking out the window with his feet. He also likes to share his story with groups, inspiring them to make a difference in the world. Over the last couple of years, for example, Ravlett has spoken to journalism students at the university as well as athletes at UNC and Duke. Ravlett will likely reach his largest audience yet in September of that year. This was written in 2003, when a one-hour documentary will air about him on the Discovery Channel. Yeah. Viewers will get an in-depth look at his life, including the early years when he lived in an orphanage because his parents couldn't handle his handicap. Fortunately, the orphanage laid the foundation for Ravlett to become the independent and strong person that he is today. He's lived in 9 states, always worked physically challenging jobs, and has been married to his second wife, Marie, for 13 years. He has a 38-year-old daughter from a previous marriage. Ravlett says he came to fully understand the purpose for his life after becoming a member of the Baha'i faith in 1967. He said this Baha'i statement changed his life. Quote, "Noble have I created thee, yet thou hast abased thyself." Ravlett said he knew then that he was called to do more with his life and have an impact on society. As Marty put it in his own words, "God has given every one of us a gift. My gift is that I was born with no arms." Marty Ravlett passed away last week, and I know that all of us in this community will miss him and are inspired by his example. And if I could ask us all to observe a moment of silence in his honor. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Very nice.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Could we possibly move item number 3 to number 1? Because the Neals are here, and I'm not sure they want to sit through the other stuff
all
in front
the,
of them.
All the 21 agenda items ahead of them.
Yeah. I don't mean
no, that's
the consent
fine.
Agenda.
We'll handle the consent
the,
agenda.
Yeah.
Virtually everything else is the consent agenda. But sure, let's...
Yeah,
that sounds good.
We have a little one at home.
Okay. With that, we do not have anybody signed up to speak on matters not on the agenda. So, Mr. Manager, if you could briefly summarize. We do have one. Oh, I see. I guess the pen kind of gave up the ghost on you in the midst of signing up, so I apologize for my having missed that. Jonathan? No? What does it say?
It's Carver Parks Project.
Oh, but then it says something over to the right of that. But anyway, come on up.
So, my name is donation.
This is a good thing, Mark.
Outstanding.
It's really nice.
Continue, please.
Do I have your attention? My name is Julia Hicks, and I'm a member. I'm a resident of Carrboro, and I'm the president of the Carrboro Parks Project. And my friends and I are very excited and happy to give you this. This check for $7,000. We have been working with many people in the community to raise this so that we can help you purchase a beautiful state-of-the-art tennis backboard for Carrboro Park and for Anderson Park, and it's going to be a wonderful thing. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This is Rob and Susan. There are others.
Probably to.
Do we hand this to someone?
All right. We're getting the.
Could someone accept the check on the
phone? Anita, if you would come up, please, and join us up here.
And, take it home.
Formally receive
a wonderful Kodak moment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Which number?
Yeah.
It's
in the.
Thank you very much. And before you go, hold on right there.
Number seven.
There has been a motion for resolution number seven, a resolution of appreciation and budget amendment for donated funds to purchase and install tennis backboards at Anderson and Wilson Parks. Moved by Alderman Gist and seconded by Alderman Herrera. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're still appreciating the sale.
Great job.
genuinely appreciate that there are a lot of folks in the Carrboro Parks Project organization who have spent a lot of time to make this possible, and we really sincerely appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Item one is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of October 16th and 23rd. Item two is an award of a contract for Carrboro's comprehensive bicycle plan. Item three is a request to authorize the purchase of a dump truck with a V-salt box spreader and plow and declaring a 1995 dump truck a surplus property for the purpose of a trade-in. Item four is a request to grant a temporary right-of-way for utilities to facilitate the Greenbridge development. Item five is a request to sell property located at Piney Mountain Road by upset bid. Item six is award of contract for installation of an emergency generator at the Century Center. Item seven you just took care of. Item 8 is a town code amendment for parking restrictions on Sweet Bay Place. Item 9 is a request to set a public hearing on an ordinance amending the land use ordinance to modify foot candle limitations in B1C and B1G districts and parking space dimensions. That hearing would be January 22, 2008. Item 10 is a request from the farmers market to increase the use of the town commons to year-round status. Item 11 is a town code amendment adding a section on school zones to Chapter 6. Item 12 is a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 13 is a request to set a public hearing for Roberson Square mixed-use project conditional use permit, also for January 22, 2008. Item 14 is a budget amendment for the Weaver Street design. Item 15 is a request for approval of wastewater transfer from Blenheim Woods Development. Item 16 is a request to make an appointment to the Recreation and Parks Commission. Item 17, a request to make an appointment to the Environmental Advisory Board. Item 18 is a request to set a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment to authorize density bonus units for payments made in lieu of constructing affordable housing units. That also will be scheduled for January 22, 2008. And last but not least, a request to make an appointment to the Economic Sustainability Commission.
Move the items.
I'd like to pull 16.
With 16 pulled, I'll second that.
Okay, move all but 16.
Second that.
All right, all items except for 16, and we already passed 7, but all items but 7 and 16 have been moved. All those, and seconded, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Item 16.
This shouldn't take but a minute. Somebody else has also applied and has been approved by the chair of Recreation and Parks, and I'd like us to go ahead and appoint him tonight so that we don't have to wait until January. And that's Kevin First, F-U-E-R-S-T. Just like to add his name to the appointment.
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we appoint Kevin First and who else? Who's the original recommendation?
Charlene Parker.
And Charlene Parker to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, agenda item D1.
Oh, excuse me,
agenda item D3.
Three, right.
Okay, item three is Arden the Pickle Revolving Loan Fund Application. The purpose of this item is to present the Board of Aldermen a loan request from Matthew and Sheila Neal of 109 Shelton Street to open Neal's Deli.
James, did you have anything?
Good evening. The purpose of this item is to introduce this revolving loan fund application for Art and a Pickle. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce Matt and Sheila Neal, the applicants. They're in the audience. Currently, we have $486,610 in the revolving loan fund.
All of it from principal and interest?
Yes, all from principal and interest. And they're requesting $105,000. To create Neal's Deli in the old open eye space. They've worked very hard on this. We've been working since last March pulling this together. They're expecting to create 10 and a half full-time equivalent jobs over the next 6 years. The SBTDC and the ESC have both reviewed this application and they supported it. The applicants have saved $50,000 of their personal money to support this project. And we're recommending approval of it at a six-year term at 2% interest.
Just want to note that Matt and Sheila have been working on this for a long time, and we've been talking about it for a long time, and it's going to rock, and I will so move the resolution approving the loan.
And I'll second it because we really need this.
We need a deal.
We need it.
So
thank you.
All right.
The resolution's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you.
We'll
let
us know when the first day is going to be.
Yeah, we're the same.
All right. Great. With that, Mr. Manager, item D1.
Okay. Item D1 is a consideration of adopting a time-limited anti-lingering ordinance for the area around the intersection of Davy Road and Jones Ferry Road. The purpose of this item is for the board to consider adopting a limited anti-lingering ordinance for the area around the intersection of Davy Road and Jones Ferry Road to reduce the trash and also the behavior problems occurring near the intersection without unduly restricting the right of people to seek work at that location. In addition, the board is asked to consider the staff report regarding the possibility of moving the pickup location to Town Commons, an option which might still require the adoption of the anti-lingering ordinance to succeed. No staff presentation. We thought we had a public hearing on this previously, and this was continued to this meeting, and staff is prepared to respond to questions if the board has any.
We have one person, at least one person, who's here to speak on this matter. Mark, former Alderman Mark Dorson.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I want to come tonight to urge the board not to adopt this anti-lingering ordinance. Good. I believe it's constitutionally suspect, with all due respect to my friend Mike Bro. I believe it's constitutionally suspect, and it's also bad public policy.
Right.
The ordinance, as written, impinges on a number of protected constitutional rights. It burdens First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and free association. And what has been accepted by our courts as the fundamental right to movement. The ordinance as written is constitutionally unsound because it's overbroad, which means that it does not distinguish between innocent and potentially criminal conduct. There's no exception in the ordinance for activities that would be expressly protected by the First Amendment, political speech, the right to protest. It also criminalizes status rather than behavior, the status of being on the street. Because it doesn't have any specific exceptions for otherwise protected First Amendment speech, the ordinance potentially creates a broad and unworkable discretion for the police who have to enforce it. And I would also note constitutionally, by criminalizing status rather than conduct, the ordinance effectively undermines the Fourth Amendment's requirement for probable cause before someone can be arrested. Even if the ordinance could be tweaked or revised to make exceptions for these constitutionally protected rights, I think more fundamentally, there's a liberty interest under the 14th Amendment to loiter. The Supreme Court has said in the leading case on anti-loitering ordinances that the freedom to loiter for innocent purposes is part of the liberty protected by the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. There are currently ordinances on the books to address the conduct that's at issue here, littering, public urination, harassment, and I think that the statement in the attachment that these cannot practically be resolved by enforcing current ordinances is really a damning assessment of our police capabilities. Finally, it would be disingenuous to speak about this ordinance, I think, without referencing the racial implications that are implicit in it. Although the ordinance, of course, is facially neutral, it's clear that it is designed to address a group of people who are Latinos and will most likely be enforced against exclusively one racial group. And so I urge the board to consider not adopting this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak on this matter before the board considers it?
I'd just like to hear the attorney's response to some of the issues that Mark's raised.
Well, of course, I won't address the policy issues, but with respect to the legal matters, when Mark says that the ordinance is constitutionally suspect, if by that he means that there's a constitutional challenge could be brought to it, that is certainly the case, as we've discussed. Is as Carver often does, puts us out front in an area where I cannot find any specific case that deals with this kind of an ordinance. And those the same sentiments that Mark had expressed were also expressed by the folks at the ACLU that in the letters that I've sent to you. I've looked at those cases. I don't think they answer directly the questions that are raised by this ordinance. Ultimately, in my judgment, what it comes down to is a question of whether it is possible to say that in a very limited area, in a time-specific manner, you can essentially make it unlawful simply to be in that area, per se, even though just being in the area in and of itself is not a harmful conduct, whether you can essentially say, legally you can say, you can't be there, not because being there in and of itself is detrimental to the public health or safety, but because of the what happens when you are there as a matter of factual result. And in, you certainly couldn't do that area-wide. It's not a loitering ordinance. All the other cases that are cited and looked at deal with different kinds of circumstances, gang-related issues, associational issues, issues where you're talking about loitering, which gets into status questions, covering much broader areas. There's just, and I've checked with the folks at the school government, and there really is nothing that specifically addresses this kind of an issue. So is it subject to constitutional challenge? Sure it is. Would we survive it? I don't know. I mean, there's nobody who can. I've asked the ACLU folks and the others at the school government, is there any case law that addresses exactly this kind of thing? And the answer is just uniformly no. Now, you can make analogies, you can draw parallels, you can say, well, it's like this and it's like that, but nothing that addresses it in this way. I don't think that the ordinance is, my own view of it is it's not overbroad and it's not vague. It just says you can't be there for any reason other than the reason of walking through the area. So now the question is, can you say that because by allowing folks to be in that area, you create the kinds of conditions and circumstances which are unlawful? And I don't know the answer to the question. There's no case law that specifically addresses it. Different people have different views on the matter. And as I've said, you know, when you try and get guidance out of the Supreme Court, as Bart knows well, when they split 27 different ways from Sunday, you by the time you read these cases, you know, you end up with pluralities that make statements and they get picked up in subsequent cases. And you just, I can't tell you that it is. I think it is. I think it's defensible. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and give you an odds on whether it can be challenged. So it's like a lot of other things that Garber has done in the past. We're just a little out front. Mark. That ordinance.
Jackie and then Randy.
Go ahead, Randy.
Well, I'm wondering, I was going to refer to attachment E, and I'm wondering if there's a way to look at the problem after we take, after we're able to extract the relocation of the day laborers and maybe see if that helps to address some of the problem or inform our thinking. So I don't want to jump ahead of process, but I wanted to update folks on the potential to relocate the day laborers through my conversations with Ben Baldares of El Centro and Mauricio Castro. So if you think that's applicable now, or
no.
This is a process question, really?
I think it's not, because we're dealing with two separate issues. Not everybody that hangs at that corner is, in fact,
precisely.
Is there, like, with day labor. I have trusted Mike's legal guidance for a long, long time, and you know, if Mike says this is a good way of dealing with this problem, then I'm willing to second it and see where it goes. It may be one of those things, like the other times when we go out on a line, where, you know, we put, like, a year, like, sunset clause on it and say we're going to revisit it in a year and see if it's working. So if there's no other discussion, I'd like, and then there's some things I want to say after we vote on this about other issues, but I'd like to go ahead and move this with the idea that we revisit it in a year.
On your second.
Okay.
I do have something to say, and I'm 100% against this because the way it was brought up, and this is a knee-jerk reaction, truly, to a much larger issue. And an issue that only is, you know, we have plenty of laws in the books. It's illegal to do many things, and still, you know, people still drink, people still speed, people still drive. There's a lot of issues that they're just passing a law and in trying to enforce it, we know it doesn't work. So do I know that this is going to work? I think we already know the answer to this stuff. Is this the Carbora way to deal with things? Absolutely not. I mean, I think this is Arizona. This might be, you know, I mean, we'll be joining the crowd of all these anti-immigrant states. Aldo, as former Alderman Dorsey mentioned, this is, race neutral, but we don't know what we're talking about here. And we know the emotions that this brings with it. There are issues and there are ways to deal with that because of the complexity of this issue. We have not even explored, you know, for years we have come up with some staff reports about we need more education. We have not done that. We have meetings, but nothing happens. We haven't done the education needs to be done. We haven't done the relocation issues. I mean, there are examples of models around the country for deliberate. Of course, it brings issues. You know, so does football games. People do pee in the stadiums and whatever, and these are deliberate folks. And do issues like this. So is this the way, is this the best way to deal with it? It is one way, and I agree. And we do have to solve a problem. We do have a problem that creates many bad issues. But is this the way that Carbora is really known for dealing with issues that when it comes to especially in civil rights matter? I mean, this would be an anti-civil rights precedent that for the very first time I think we'll be setting up at least in my tenure in this board. I strongly recommend that we give education and other community interventions a chance to work and really work, not just pass something that makes us feel good and looks good, make us look good. And we know that risking the legal defense of a constitutional challenge to our ordinance, it would be an embarrassment to Carbora civil rights legacy and history and to the many civil rights leaders that many of you in this world have helped build their reputation. I hope you vote against it and that you join the Alderman Brandy and others to work on doing the work that the educational work that needs to be done to solve these other social problems that this huge issue deals with it. This is not going to be solving the problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I think you've raised some good issues, John, and I think Mark raised some important issues to consider. I would respectfully have to disagree on a couple of points. One, which both you and Mark raised, is the presumption that enforcement of this ordinance is somehow ethnically biased. It is. I think it's unfair to the police department to presume that they would exhibit any bias in enforcement of the ordinance as has been put forward. This is a tool that has been requested by our staff and. Correct me, Chief Hutchinson, if I'm wrong, but by our police chief as an additional tool to use to try to deal with a very persistent problem that the department and the staff on the whole, not merely the police department, has tried to address over the years. And as we heard in a public hearing, in several public hearings over many years, that the residents of the surrounding neighborhoods are being denied their enjoyment of the public property and their sense of safety and well-being by behaviors that are occurring on a persistent basis. So I understand the concerns that you bring forward. However, this is an issue. I also think it's a mistake to commingle it with the day labor issue. I mean, while the behaviors may have sprung from the fact that day labor has been located that de facto there, the two are really separate. Those behaviors are going to take place regardless of whether the day labor folks are using that area as you know, their place to do business or not, frankly. So I completely support Randy and others' efforts
to try to find a safer and more organized method of helping the day labor folks do business. But I think these issues have to be dealt with separately. And understanding, I think, again, that John and Mark have raised some legitimate questions, but on balance, I believe that particularly, Jackie, with the one-year review clause that you've put forward, that this is a tool that our police department has requested and that it's incumbent upon us to give them this tool and give them a chance to use it to see if that can help solve the problem.
Believe it or not, I understand and agree with a lot of the issues that absolutely that all of the speakers have raised tonight, and I think that this type of ordinance certainly. There could be local governments in North Carolina that might explore ordinances of this kind, more restrictive versions of this ordinance that where I would be very suspicious of what the intention behind it all or would be. But the fact is that there's a very good reason why people stand out on the corner of this intersection. They stand out there for a good reason. To find work. That activity goes on all morning long, and under this ordinance, it will be allowed to go on all morning long. I appreciate the constitutional concerns. If the ACLU had membership cards, then I would be a card-carrying member of the ACLU, because I am a member, and a profound believer in the organization. However, I do not think that our town attorney has drafted something here that is assailable by a constitutional challenge. I mean, I think somebody could raise and argue some interesting points, but the fact is that we do have the authority to regulate traffic on our streets. This is not a prohibition of being at that corner, of traveling through that intersection, of standing out at that corner for no particular purpose. It's a regulation which affects only the activity of being at that intersection at certain times of the day. And it leaves plenty of lawful opportunity for people to stand out on that corner for the good and valid reason that people would like to do so. And even if you don't have a good and valid reason for doing so, you still have plenty of opportunity to stand out there for no reason at all, 5 or 6 hours a day under the terms of this ordinance. I appreciate the concern about the sort of possibility of a racially disparate impact of this ordinance. But I think the fact is that the motivation behind this ordinance has absolutely nothing to do with the immigration status, with the ethnicity, with the national origin of people who are thought to potentially be affected by it. The fact is that there is no town in North Carolina, I dare say there is no town in America, that has been more welcoming to Hispanic immigrants from Central America. We continue to be that. We will continue to be that town with this ordinance, and it's also a fact that it will apply as much to people of any other national origin, of any other racial group, of any other description whatsoever, and will be enforced against all those people just as it would against anybody else. And I trust, and I've been specifically told so by email by our police department, that the emphasis will be on providing the opportunity for voluntary compliance with the ordinance. That is, people who appear to be in violation of the ordinance will be asked to move along so as to comply with the ordinance, and that only as a second resort will we move to the stage of writing a citation for violation of the ordinance. In other words, a citation would only be written to people who refuse to, who are advised of the law and refuse to obey it.
With those understandings, I support the motion. Mr. Attorney, if I could ask you a question. If we have two members of the board who are absent tonight, if the vote tonight is 3-2, because this is an ordinance, is it considered to have passed on a 3-2 vote with only five of us present?
If you give me a moment to check the discussion continues, let me check the charter, because I believe the charter provides that if there's a public hearing on an ordinance, that we have a special provision that normally an ordinance cannot be adopted on its first reading except by a vote of 2/3, which would be in our case five members, I think, my math being what it is. But I think we have a provision, I believe, that, if I can find it, but if you will give me a minute, perhaps you can hear some
okay.
of the comments.
Okay, well, we have a few questions and comments.
I hear what some of you who are proposing this argument is, and it still doesn't convince me, doesn't raise to the level that is like compelling and convincing that this is going to work. I will give our police department and our staff all the resources they need to number one, this is an anti-immigrant ordinance, and it will be because it is so site-specific. It's not real nice against Latinos. And in Carbaro, somebody even said it's not cool to be anti-Hispanic, when I quote. It is very site-specific. You know, it's not old folks who go to work and get picked up in that corner. Again, it is a complexity problem, not just an enforcement one. I mean, we just do an enforcement. It sounds like Republicans here. We're doing enforcement only. We're not doing education at all. You know, it's a really lack of leadership on behalf of this board. If we just pass an enforcement-only solution, quote-unquote, and also if we can, let's be honest, let's do it through whole the town of Carbaro. Why are we going to just pick on a certain group of people? Let's do it in the whole town because the problem is everywhere, not just in a little corner. So let's be honest then, and don't be hypocrites.
I'm not going to get into this except that I refuse to sit here and have this board accused of being anti-Hispanic because we are trying to protect a neighborhood that has been coming to us for years complaining about behavior on that corner. The people that hang out on that corner are not just one ethnic group. You can go down there right now and check it out. And I refuse to be painted with that brush, and I think that that's dirty pool. That's all I'm going to say on that, and I'm going to vote for this. Several years ago, many, many years ago, we had a similar problem in Baldwin Park and came up with some site-specific language to deal with that problem. It's not a problem throughout Carbaro. It's a problem on that corner. People in that neighborhood do not feel safe in their neighborhood. They do not feel like they can come to and fro from their neighborhood because a bunch of guys want to hang out on the corner and get drunk and misbehave. And, yes, if that was on any other corner, we'd be dealing with it on other corners
there
as
is.
Well.
Where do you live?
That's all I'm going to say.
There is in Carbaro.
Mark.
I'm done.
I've said my bit.
You know, I've had several conversations with some leaders in the Hispanic Latino community and about level of comfort with the anti-lingering potential for an ordinance. And interestingly enough, you know, the folks I spoke to are concerned as well. They're really very determined that the education and the protection of the workers come first. So one of the things, when Jackie recommended the idea of a sunset clause, that to me that strikes a win-win balance, because one of the things that we would be able to do is clearly have a two-pronged attack. We can protect the neighborhood while at the same time relocating the day laborers and addressing education. And I think having a window of opportunity to do that is something that benefits all of Carrboro. And that's the reason that I can support the anti-lingering ordinance at this point, because I see the opportunity to, you know, to address all sides with a very specific window.
Just want to add one point, just sort of on globally, where you mentioned that, you know, you weren't convinced that it's going to work, and I would just add that every ordinance, but that every ordinance is to some degree an experiment. You think that it's most likely that it will have the desired effect. I think it's always a mistake when one tries to sell an ordinance or a tool as being the panacea that is going to instantly wipe away the problem. They are yet, it's just yet another tool to try to deal with the problem. And I think that, as you said, Randy, that Jackie's caveat to, again, evaluate its effectiveness after 1 year is that says we're dealing openly and honestly and saying we're going to try this, see how well it works. If it don't work, well, try something else.
Yeah.
But, I think we've heard reports from staff and from citizens that there have been outreach efforts over the years to try to address these issues. Now, perhaps they didn't work. Yes, unsuccessful. Exactly. That's the point. They were unsuccessful. So if it's unsuccessful, you do something else. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Mr. Attorney, it may not be relevant at this point, but just so that I know the answer for the future.
You're required to have a majority of the members of the board that are not excused from voting, and no one would be excused from voting on this matter, to adopt an ordinance. But you are not required to have at this meeting, we're not required to have a two-thirds vote, i.e. five votes. So we require, because of our special charter provision, since the board did hold a public hearing on the ordinance, it would require four votes, not five.
So essentially, the answer is that if we hold a public hearing, we need four affirmative votes to pass
just
an ordinance.
Just a simple majority.
Yes.
But a simple majority of the total number
of the total number of the board members for an ordinance or anything like an ordinance.
All right. So I think we've explored the different points of view at this point on this issue. And the ordinance has been moved and seconded to be effective as of today and until this time next year. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The matter passes 4-1, and we will take up this subject again a little less than a year from now,
y'all
perhaps.
Beat yourselves silly.
Yeah.
And I can watch it on television.
Somehow I doubt that you will.
This one I think I might
you might
tune
in
for.
Yeah. Randy, let me turn back.
I just
to
wanted to
relocation.
Share an update on attachment E. And in the last meeting I had with Ben Balderas of El Centro and Mauricio Castro and James Harris, we looked at potential places for relocation that would be potentially acceptable not only to the workers but the contractors. And I'm wondering if there's a slide. Okay. So that folks present in the viewing audience can take a look. The town of Carrboro owns property that can possibly serve as a small pilot pickup site. And, Drew, would you orient us?
Is it this one or both of these? I'm not sure, but I think it's primarily
yeah,
this.
It's that one, but give everyone a sense of
where is this?
Jones Ferry Road coming out of town, 54.
Right.
bypass and the Willow Creek Shopping Center, Burger King, and the plot of land we're talking about.
Okay, so is everybody comfortable with the orientation? So Town of Carver owns that piece of property, and a couple things about it that make me think that it has some potential, and also Ben Baldares and Maurice looked at it. One is that it's within walking distance to Abbey Court. And Drew, would you show where Abbey Court is on there? Because I don't want to...
It's not the old well, but that's the old name for it. It's right in here.
Right, okay. And would you just show proximity to Davy?
Davy Road, I think, is that
right
there.
That's it.
And
okay.
Is this Ridgemount? Other?
Yep. There's a sidewalk from Abbey Court all the way down to Willow on the south side of Jones Ferry Road. And there's a crosswalk and a traffic signal at Willow Creek to the potential site. So one of the things that I'm envisioning could potentially happen on that piece of Town of Carver property is that there could be a bus pickup space created with benches, with garbage pails, with a port-a-john, with the the basic needs for people who are waiting for pickup during the work hours. We're looking for it to elevate the workers so that they feel some sense of dignity when they're trying to get to work, basically, and embrace our workforce, because it is a viable workforce after all. So so we're continuing conversation about how to create this, and if everyone is comfortable, we're going to continue with that. So that's my update.
Thank you for your leadership.
Good
on
work.
That, Randy. That's
would it be appropriate maybe to refer this concept to the to the manager and the town staff for some reaction?
Well, yeah.
Is that essentially what your proposal is at this point?
I think they're in conversation with us, but...
Well, I mean, in other words, for the board to formally ask
right.
for some response from the town manager about the concept.
That's fine. And we, as Randy mentioned, I mean, staff's been involved, but, we certainly need to be more involved because we've not looked at the financial feasibility and, working with DOT and others to make sure that this works, but our initial sort of quick review is that it certainly makes sense to pursue.
Okay. So I'll take that as a motion from Alderman Haven O'Donnell to refer this matter to the
second.
Staff, seconded by Alderman Zaffron. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passes unanimously.
I have one more thing on this matter. One of the items that, there were many items that the surrounding neighborhood came and spoke about, but one of the items they talked about was speeding going down Davy Road. And are we making any movement on addressing that issue as well? I know it's a very different issue, but it's still that kept coming up in their conversation. Are we looking at speed bumps there or any kind of speed?
I think what's needed most is a basically a formal petition through our petition process from the neighborhood. In other words, not the petition in the sense of coming and speaking to us,
right.
which has already happened, but a signature gathering along Davy Road to indicate that there's interest and concern from the majority of the property owners and residents along Davy Road.
We haven't gotten that. James, I know James has been the point person with the neighborhood.
We haven't spoken about the speeding and any kind of traffic calming devices on that road. I'm not too sure is that a state road?
No.
Davy?
So that's something we can address with the neighborhood.
So if you would let them know that if that's something you're still interested in, then
This issue has been raised with me a couple times by residents along Davy Road, and the opportunity for petitioning about the matter has been pointed out to residents there, and I think it's a matter of maybe somebody or a couple of people really kind of taking charge of collecting those signatures, and since that has not happened so far along there, I would like to suggest, if the staff's comfortable with this notion, that we maybe invite that we set up a little meeting and invite people who have been to the various meetings on this topic, on this larger topic, to come and learn about how we might how they might go about doing the petition process. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'd like to invite them to come to Town Hall and sit down and talk through that petition process so that maybe somebody can sort of come forward and be the point person on collecting necessary signatures or organizing the neighborhood to do so.
We can do that.
That's
make
a
sense?
Great idea, Mark.
Because it's one of these things where it's everybody's responsibility, and so it's no one's responsibility,
exactly.
And it just keeps not happening, and I feel like there's a real desire out there for something to happen, but somebody needs to feel a little more empowered somehow to make it happen.
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Manager, item D2.
Okay. This is a summary abatement hearing for 106 James Street. The purpose of this item is to conduct a quasi-judicial hearing pursuant to Town Code 1138 through 1141 to determine whether the house and property at 106 James Street are dangerous or prejudicial to the public health and safety, and if so, to direct town staff to take appropriate action. I think our town attorney has a few opening comments, and then we have our codes enforcement folks here to share a presentation.
Mike. I just want to take a minute to explain why this process or procedure. There are a couple of different procedures for dealing with housing code or housing issues. One is under the state building code, which is a procedure that we've typically followed. Another is under the minimum housing code, which we have not used. We do have a minimum housing code, and some places enforce it rather regularly, and ultimately the process there typically winds up in a house being removed or destroyed and the property owner being charged with a violation, not with a violation, with a cost of doing so. We haven't done that here for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is that typically the properties tend to be worth sufficient amounts that people are willing to fix them up. In this situation, we started our normal process with a building code violation, but as we got into it, and there was a hearing was held, as if you got in your agenda packet, a hearing was held by Mike Canova, and the folks didn't show up. And when we came down and considered what the remedy was, and in talking with them, it appeared that the real objective was not necessarily to get the house removed, and not even to get into the details of fixing up the house particularly. All that will have to be done, but basically to secure the house. And so we went to the third alternative, which we've only done in my tenure here only one time, not with a housing issue but with another issue, but to use this summary abatement process, which calls for this hearing to be held in a quasi-judicial manner, like a conditional use permit hearing. So the witness will need to be sworn, and then you have the information that will be introduced into the record as part of the agenda packet, like we do, just like a conditional use permit hearing. And then with that background, Rick can explain what he's seen, and I think he has some pictures that show you what the problems are. And as the memos indicate, we have been in contact with the person who purports to now be the owner. The record owner has apparently passed away, and we've been in contact with his widow, who lives in Washington, D.C. You all have a copy of the revised agenda packet that's on your desk that shows the deed and the notifications that Ms. Gibson, who is the widow of Mr. Eckel, has in fact been notified really twice by mail about the existence of this hearing, and also spoken to personally by T.C. Morphis in my staff. So with that.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give, the truth, to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you.
Hey, as Mr. Bro said, we're not we don't want to tear the house down. We just want to secure it. We had complaints from the neighborhood, and they were concerned about the house and what was going on around the house. So we went and investigated, and the house is still a viable residence. Somebody could move in there and do some repairs and fix it up, but that's not happening. And you've got debris on the roof. I'll show you my pictures. This is the condemned sign we put on it in March. This is where we posted the notice of the hearing in the paper, and this is a copy of the letter that we sent them notifying them of the hearing. So it's just, we laminated it, put it on the house. Lot's overgrown, and one of the things we want is for the lot to be cleaned up. You can see the ivy is taking the house, and it's thick in the yard also. And another thing we want is for the roof to be cleaned off. There's so much debris on the roof that is backing the water up and starting to come through, and is rotting the roof sheathing. This is the plywood under the shingles. These are the rafters, and that's a bad leak. It's caused the sheetrock to come apart and fall onto the floor. And once that starts happening, it's not long before the roof will be caving in, the floor will be rotting, and it just gets worse. So we want the lot cleaned up. We want the roof cleaned off. The back door is standing open, and the glass is broken out. So anybody and anything can come and go to do whatever at any time. And that was a big concern of the folks who had complained. And so another thing that we're wanting to do is to plywood not only the doors but also the windows, because if you do the doors, then if somebody wants to get in, they'll break the windows out and go in through the windows. So we want to button the house up tight, clean the roof off, and get it so the water will run off the roof. And we talked about repairing the roof, but we didn't feel like that was the town's responsibility. And that's it.
I think, could you just describe, when you looked in there, I think there was some evidence that animals had been...
There was feces on the floor. So, and what kind of animals are staying, we don't know. But the lot's overgrown, and, raccoons and squirrels and, whatever else could... They can just go and come as they please.
Did you see any evidence that anybody was staying there?
No, but some of the people in the neighborhood suspect that. And they have a legitimate concern, because any place like that, somebody will find it, whether it's teenagers using it for stuff they shouldn't be doing or vagrants just using it as a place to sleep. Something sooner or later, if it's not already going on, it will be.
Alice.
Mike, are you the only person with the town who is actually, or your firm rather, who's actually had a conversation with the owner?
Yes. I have not. T.C. Morphis has spoken with the woman who is apparently his widow. And so he did have a conversation with her.
I mean, just understanding that, stuff that gets caught up in, estate matters can be a bloody nightmare. Did we get any kind of response about why she's allowed this to take place and hasn't done anything about it?
She represented that she realized that she needed to get, as she put it, the house in her name, and just hasn't done it, apparently. Rick can relate some conversations that he had with some neighbors about there have been some offers to purchase the property. And
it's deeded in North Carolina, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, the property...
Because that doesn't matter, because under North Carolina's succession...
She goes straight to her.
Real estate passes
automatically. No, because the property... No, not, it's not quite as neat as that.
Unless there's a will, it says something different.
But the property was titled not in the name of husband and wife, but just in the name of the husband. I don't know whether they were married at the time or subsequently married or what. I don't know the personal circumstances. It's not... I don't know that she is the legal title, and I don't know what the state did, and the state wouldn't be probated here anyway because they resided in Washington. So there are obviously some family issues going on that we're not entirely sure of, but what we do know is that there's a there's an open door, basically. Yeah.
Is right.
So she's aware that, you know, that, I mean, she's clear about the actions that the town is would take.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, and could you comment again? You said the proposal doesn't include the notion of making a repair to the roof.
That's correct. I talked with Mike Canova about that today, and we had talked about that bad spot in the roof that I showed you, getting a repair done to that, and we didn't think that was the town's responsibility.
The tarp on it, though.
Yeah, I mean,
blue
I don't.
Tarp on it?
Well, we thought about that too, but you know, if you put the blue tarp on and the plywood, it's going to be sitting right there on the corner of Lorraine James Street, and it just ain't going to look pretty.
Yeah.
I guess I don't think the plywood would look all that bad, you know, down in the trees,
right,
sitting there.
Yeah, I guess my concern about that is just, as you were saying, it's not very, I mean, once that entirely, that part of the roof entirely gives away, it's,
you're
the
right,
house is not long for the world, well, so I don't.
This is just a notion. While in general it wouldn't be the town's responsibility, but if the place is in danger, you know, if the structure is in danger of collapse, and it's sort of that the alleged owner isn't really in a legal position to do anything,
right,
because the title to the property is unclear at this point.
I don't think that's the case. I think the issue may be that because the title issue has not been clarified, it's making it difficult for the property to sell, or there are people who would be interested in buying the property.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But, so.
Well, that helps.
Is there a motion?
I've so moved. I'll move the recommendation of staff.
You need to see if there's anyone else here who.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Is there anybody here hearing to speak on this matter? I don't have anybody signed up. No. Then come up to the podium.
Yes. I have one question about the thought of you were considering the thought of doing repairs to the roof, and if the town was to take that action, would they not start resuming some responsibility for any repairs that they did do to the building, short of securing it? My concern is, you know, is the town opening itself up to liability
Yeah, that's not what's on the table, Bob.
Yeah, I think the answer is, well, possibly, but
I think that the town's opportunity is simply just to eliminate the nuisance, whatever that may be, and the nuisance that's been identified is really the roof situation and the access. And so I don't think the town would be getting into doing repairs that would require, you know, building permits and all those sorts of things. That's not what eliminating the nuisance would be about. I would say that, you know, if this process were not to be successful, if something doesn't happen and the structure continues to deteriorate, we probably would have to go through the minimum housing code enforcement, which would ultimately result in the loss, potentially a loss of the house. We'd have to take it down and charge the party. But I don't. It's really unimaginable to me that it would get that far. It's not unimaginable. It's unlikely, unless we just end up with a property owner who just absolutely refuses to do anything, including sell the property to someone who wants to fix it up. But that's where we're going. This route is to provide basically an opportunity to eliminate the safety issue that is there now and give us time to get the rest of the thing worked out. I think it will be worked out. We're dealing apparently with a person. They may have some family issues, but apparently she seems, according to TC, is a competent individual.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a good faith. The property owner is operating in good faith. They're just,
and this could be just the nudge.
They're in a bind.
Yeah, I think that's it. There was a motion for resolution number 50. We actually need to, we would need to, in conjunction with that, make some findings of fact. Mr. Attorney,
yeah,
right?
I think we've got the resolution drafted, and is the findings, in fact, are all there, the attachment,
yeah.
D. unless subject to any additional ones that you want to make. And it then essentially just orders the town to do what we've described, although it talks about mowing grass. There really isn't any grass there, but cleaning up the lot. There should be an attachment D that in the revised agenda.
I don't think I have. Oh, in the revised.
The separate.
Oh, I see. Yeah, in the stapled item. Okay, right here.
D is the yes, it's a problem that needs to be abated. E is the no, it's not. So
I'd like to ask Mike
a
question.
All right.
Mark, I'd like to just ask Mike one question, and that is if there's any findings that there's a greater fire risk on this structure. I understand the water damage, but with it being so dry, is there any concern for potential?
Well, that's a good point. There was a lot of overgrown brush out there, and anytime you have that condition and it's dry, there's certainly a fire risk.
Okay.
This resolution does address some doing some yard work.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it says all other necessary and reasonable measures to make the situation safe, correct?
Yes. And I think we've got, estimated cost of doing what was described in here?
$1,000.
About $1,000. So we're not talking about
some
major cost. And, you know, I guess one thing the board may wish to address or not, and that is the question of do we give the person some, you know, reasonable period of time, like according to your discretion, 2 weeks or something, before we would execute this order, so to speak. Because it would take us a little while to get a contractor to do it anyway.
To the 1st of December or something like that.
Yeah, that would be part of the additional findings of fact. Yeah.
Well, that would be part of the additional order. Just
order. Okay, gotcha.
Subsection 8 or whatever.
Yeah, it is 8.
Okay. So is the motion for the revised resolution 50 with giving the owner until December 1st?
Well, that's not even 2 weeks. I'd go a little longer because holiday messes everything up.
Well,
so maybe the
I was giving a little longer than 1 week. It's your motion. What's the date?
December 4th is 2 weeks.
Okay.
So your motion is for December 4th.
Is that the end of that week?
Does that work?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. It's been moved and seconded the resolution number 50 in the revised agenda item with the owner being given until December 4th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. We are on agenda item D4.
Thanks for your work on that.
You will.
Thank you.
Creation of a Land Trust Affordable Housing Maintenance Task Force.
And let me just say that the purpose statement under this is really what this task force would do. The purpose of this item is simply to ask the board to make an appointment from one of your own, and also the board has the opportunity to appoint a Carrboro resident to the task force. Is that correct, James?
I want to suggest, unless somebody has some other suggestion, that and James and I communicated today with Gary Kremling, who was the person who came and spoke about actually pretty much exactly this issue at one of our recent public hearings, that maybe Gary Kremling might be the person. He indicated that he'd be willing to serve on the committee if that suits people. And then we're also supposed to appoint a member of the Board of Aldermen.
I would like to step up and do it because it kind of dovetails with the homeless thing, and it dovetails with some of my money issues.
Hearing no argument there.
Unless
moved.
All right, it's been moved to appoint Alderman Gist and Gary Kremling, and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Follow-up report from the Smith Level Road Task Force.
On June 19, 2007, the Board of Aldermen received a report from the Smith Level Road Task Force. At the conclusion of the report, the board requested that staff prepare comments on the recommendations and identify any additional tasks for the task force. This agenda item provides the requested staff follow-up and includes two resolutions for board consideration. And Adina Messinger, our transportation planner, has made her way to the podium.
Good
Good evening. Just to get us up to speed as to where we are today, the Smith Level Road Task Force was created in the end of 2006, and this was out of some residents' concerns about the vehicular and pedestrian safety along the Smith Level Road corridor. The task force met for several months between March and June of this year, and that culminated in a report to the board on June 19th. And as Steve just said, at the conclusion of that, the board referred those recommendations to the staff. They also extended the charge of the Smith Level Road Task Force to accommodate additional presentations to various other municipalities and jurisdictions. And also, I believe, asked staff to think about what an extension of their charge might be. And so Terry Buckner, the chair of the task force, was able to make presentations to both Orange County and to the town of Chapel Hill in September and October, respectively. At the conclusion of those presentations, both jurisdictions referred the recommendations to their staff for follow-up. And I believe it was requested that the follow-up be provided before the end of this year. And to this date, Carborough staff has not received any follow-up. So we're still working on that. On November 12th, the TAB held a special meeting to take a look at the recommendations and provide some input as well. And so that's where we are today. This table is very similar to the one that you have in your agenda packets, and I will credit Terry with creating most of this table and kind of setting it out this way. It was very helpful to understand what the task force was recommending and who they actually are making these recommendations of. And if you'll bear with me, I do just want to go through these briefly to explain this last column, which is a little bit different than what you have in your packet. And what I've done here is tried to show how the resolution that we are proposing addresses each of the recommendations that the task force has brought forth to the board. And so just to start with the first one, which is looking at the two turn lanes that are on 15501, and they kind of merge onto Smith Level Road at the juncture of Chatham and Orange County. And the fifth item on that resolution really approaches this and several other items as recommending that the town staff and a liaison from the board work to get together with the folks from these other jurisdictions and try to make joint recommendations and requests of DOT so that it becomes more of a joint effort, and it's really not just any one jurisdiction standing out there and making those recommendations. And in light of that, I would add and note that there might be the need to make an adjustment to the resolution. I apologize. I left out just including Chatham and DOT in the list of people to work with, so I just wanted to call your attention to that as well. Items, recommendations 2 through 7 on this list over here are all covered under the first resolution, which is really asking for all of these items, or asking DOT to take a look at all of these as a comprehensive way of looking at this concern for safety and pedestrian and bike access along the road. And in discussing this with the Transportation Advisory Board and in staff, kind of thinking about what these recommendations were asking, really it's, you know, there's some serious concerns, and really the folks with the power here is DOT. They're the ones who we need to really talk to about making some changes. And what we'd like to do is approach them and say, we have these concerns, and hopefully approach them multi-jurisdictionally and say, what can we do? And here's a whole bunch of things that we've come up with that might be possible, and what can we do to make it safer? So that's how those recommendations were addressed. Number 8 is the request to enforce speed limits. And that's kind of wrapped into the issue of to what's provided in item number 5 of the resolution. This would be a request that needs to be made to the State Highway Patrol, and kind of recognizing the limitations on their resources to do that, it would seem, again, if this was a joint jurisdictional request, perhaps it might carry some more weight to, you know, make that request for them to increase speed limit enforcement there. Recommendation number 9, which is dealing with the bike routes and getting those into the long-range transportation plan that the MPO has, designating certain areas in this corridor and adjacent to that as part of the different bike plans. Item number 2 in the resolution addresses that directly for Carrboro. As you know, we are going through a comprehensive bike plan planning process right now, and so the recommendation is to incorporate that part of Smith Love Road into that planning process. And then it could be referred and sort of brought up with these other municipalities as well as part of item number five of the resolution. The recommendation to explore landowner compacts is addressed in items 3 and 4 of the resolution, where, you know, if developments come before Carrboro, you know, we can certainly take a look and see what can be done with regard to landowner compacts and providing some sort of easement for a multimodal path to parallel Smith Love Road. The 11th recommendation really was directed at Orange Public Transit, and this was presented to Orange County when Terry Buckner had made her presentation, and so that would be incorporated into, you know, again, one of the things we want to follow up with Orange County and see how they're responding to this request. And then for this last recommendation, it's really regarding how parents get their students to the schools, and this was one of the issues that the TAB also kind of struggled with and really not finding a satisfactory way that the town could do something about this. And so it's not included in the resolution that's before you. So that's the brief overview of how all the recommendations have been addressed. And I can put those back up in a sec if necessary. And so what the recommended actions are is to approve the resolution in Attachment A, which is all the stuff that I've just gone through. And we also have a resolution in Attachment B, which is, again, bringing up the idea of the Smith Love Road Task Force and where do they go from here. The recommendation from staff is to dissolve it. They have fulfilled their charge. They were able to make additional presentations, and we feel that at this time it's appropriate to dissolve them as a Carrboro-supported task force. Certainly not to say that those folks should, you know, they certainly can stay as a group and see how things unfold from here. But that's what that recommendation is.
Okay,
questions?
Thank you. Very nice presentation.
Well done.
Thank you.
I see you. There are a couple of members of the task force.
I just wanted to see if Terry wanted to add.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand the process here. So the fact of item 5 on resolution and what you all are going to vote on. So I looked through all the paperwork and I'm just not clear. So let me just say that I have a couple of questions about things that I understand Adina to be saying, and I may be misunderstanding. So on number 8, enforcing the speed limit, after having spoken with both the State Patrol, the Highway Sheriff, and the Orange County Sheriff, multiple times over the past several years, it is clear that the Highway Patrol has no intention ever under any circumstances ever of coming out to Smith Level Road. Their task is to deal with the interstate, and that's it. The Orange County Sheriff, however, has acquired tracking guns, so they can do speed traps, they can do enforcement, and it is part of their task, as they have explained it to me, to do that. They just don't. And so when we put this on here, I was hoping there would be some engagement with the Orange County Sheriff to find out why they don't, or maybe negotiate with them to do it every now and then. So anyway, not to disagree with Adina about the Highway Patrol, but there was some exploration there.
I think just in fairness to the Sheriff's Department, we'll point out that I think until maybe about 5 years ago, the state law provided that sheriff's departments were not allowed to do speed enforcement, basically, on state highways. They've been now given authority but not mandate necessarily to do it. And so some counties do a certain amount of it and some don't.
And until 2 years ago, they didn't have anyone trained, and they did not have the equipment.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, up to 2 years ago, Lindy said, "We don't do traffic."
And he was right, and he may be given the authority anyway. All right.
The other item that I wanted to take exception to was the one on the landowner compacts. When we wrote up our recommendations, we weren't necessarily asking for the town to look at this as new development, but that there are three existing properties that all combine going from Damascus Church over to the high school. And what we were hoping was that if we, the residents of the area, made the contact with those landowners to see if they would be willing to give some kind of easement, then we would get the town support to draw up some kind of legal agreement so that the kids wouldn't be accused of trespassing or anything like that. So not to say that the landowner compact would only be new development, but to help us legally do something with existing property.
Which item on is it on that page or is it on the other page?
It's on the next one. That is
number 10. From 15501 to the high school, okay, meaning from Star Point, basically, to the high school. Right, okay.
Yeah. The properties that we did identify, though, the three were between Damascus and the high school.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really look
at one of those is the Chapel Hill gravel mine, is that right?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
No. That one we were
okay, keep going. Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
And that's it. I don't know what item 2 and item 5 of resolution mean up here on the bike path, but what I was hoping would come out of that was that Carborough would say, yes, we want to add this to our bicycle plan now, so that then Chapel Hill would say, oh, look, they did it, we'll do it too, and Orange County would do the same thing, and it would have a kind of a ripple effect.
I think you'd mean, Resolution 61, Section 2 effectively does that. It says, include the section of Smith Level Road, and it only says from Colbert's Road to 15501 as part of the current planning of Carborough's comprehensive bike plan. What is the staff's thinking about saying Colbert's Road to 15501 as opposed to our planning jurisdiction goes all the way to Star Point? All the way to Star Point would work.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So
do you see what I'm asking? It's in the resolution. It says
number 2.
Include the section of Smith Level Road from Culbert Road to 15501. Or does it mean? I'm sorry. See, I'm getting confused. Culbert Road south to 15501.
Yes.
Sorry. Right.
Yes.
I was thinking north to NC 54.
Oh, no. Anyway. No.
Okay, sorry.
That's what Roy was whispering in my ear. we could plan for something out in our plan, in our ETJ, but we can't do it.
Right.
And we can't build it.
We can't spend Carborough tax dollars right. outside of town limits. But,
right.
But there was no cost involved in just saying
but that's but it's right. And that's what I'm saying. It's in here as a part of the plan, but obviously, we're not going to spend Carborough tax dollars until, or on an area that's not in the town limits, and so it kind of gets into another, and you know, it almost leads over into the next agenda item. I'll say in some ways, but we'll come back to that in just a minute.
So, are we ready to move the item?
Yeah, I think so.
I most strenuously support the recommendations of staff. I think they're excellent.
So we have two. We have
I'm talking about A first and, of course,
yeah.
B.
Right.
We'll get to that in a moment.
We'll get those.
So
A
first. Resolution 61 has been moved and seconded out.
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Is there a motion on Attachment B, Resolution
61? Hey, Terry, you guys done? Is dissolving the task force.
62
is dissolving the task
62.
Force.
Well,
thanking you immensely.
And
then dissolve.
Um,
Well, Resolution 61, which was just passed, requests a number of these things. You know, basically, we're formally requesting from DOT a number of the things that are listed there, and then adds this to our bicycle plan, and it does a couple other things here. That's already passed. Resolution 62 is basically draws a conclusion to our staff involvement with the task force. Is there a motion for that?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Resolution 62, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Thank you to everyone who is involved in this, and I know
I
think a couple different people in the planning department were involved.
There you go.
Me too.
We'll be waiting for you.
Thank you.
All right.
Status recommendations for the next item.
Okay, thank you. All right, item D6, STPDA funding priorities for blah, 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 blah.
Well, since the dean is already up there, I'll let her blah, 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 and I won't go into that. So.
Sounds good.
It's your last chance on one of these.
Everybody's leaving. So this was sort of brought up a little bit last week in the CIP discussion, but essentially the MPO has issued a call for projects so that they can allocate over the next 6 years, their STPDA funds. These are the directly allocated funds that the MPO gets to sort of do as they choose with. And so the staff has compiled a list for y'all to discuss and to comment on, and I'll sort of get to some of the other things that you might be able to do with that list in a minute. And again, sort of discussing this list and maybe having a set of projects to submit to the MPO for possible funding will carry with it a 20% town match, and so that's just kind of to have that in the background. Additionally, the MPO, when they do these allocations, they do reserve a certain amount of funding each year for annual calls for projects. So it's a small amount, certainly compared to the overall pot of money, but there is this annual opportunity to submit a project for funding should it not get funded through the TIP process or through this this call for STPDA projects. And the reason why it's kind of coming at you one week after the next is because the MPO is looking to make these allocations approximately in January, which means that over the next 2 months, the various members of the MPO who sits on the different committees will be tossing this around, and it will be important to have, you know, from each jurisdiction what their list of projects are so they can make that allocation. Another large table. This is what you guys have in your packet. The first four columns, I think, are fairly self-explanatory. This last column does not have a label, but essentially it's just a way of explaining how these particular projects made it onto this list. Just so that's where we were coming from when we put this list together. And I'll put this back up in a minute. And so what is up for discussion is this list. Essentially, are these the projects that the town would like to submit for STPDA funding at this time? And whatever that list is should be accompanied by specific funding years for each project, because we need to let the MPO know that we would want Project X to be funded in a particular year, so they can then, you know, go ahead and make those allocations. And then sort of just an exercise of prioritization, and the point of doing that is when the MPO evaluates the different projects, they come out with a long list and they're ranked, and oftentimes projects are tied, and so they use the local priority as sometimes as a way to break the tie, which is the point of doing a prioritization.
Dina, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe preliminarily we did have to submit something by year, so it might be helpful at least to share with the board staff's thoughts about
what the annual allocation. Yeah. Sure, let me go back. Oh, I keep doing that. One, two, three. Sure. The first sort of crack at this, the MPO actually took earlier this week, and there was a meeting this morning, or rather this afternoon, about it. Needless to say, nothing was concluded. Lots more discussions to be had. But the initial annual sort of allocation of these is that we had submitted, and which can certainly be modified, was that the Wilson Park multi-use path, which is the second item, was allocated for the 09 fiscal year. The Rogers Road was for the 10. The Westbrook feasibility study, I believe, was also for 09. And I think the bike loops were for, again, 10. Those two were placed there because those are some activities that are currently happening anyway that the town is undertaking. The Greenway, I believe, was for 11. South Greensboro sidewalk was for 12. And the Bell Arbor was for 13, just to spread them out and see if we had any luck getting things funded. Thank you, Steve.
Looks good.
Yeah, I think that's the sounds like the right order of priority to me.
Great. So do you need a motion from us?
Yes. In the resolution, it just requests for that list, so I can take that back and just.
Okay. I would move the resolution with staff's recommendation for priorities included in it.
Second.
Based on those dates that you just read off.
Right.
In other words.
Okay.
All right.
Does that make sense to you?
It does. Although there's just two that are allocated for the same funding year.
The Wilson Park multi-use path is clearly, that's what will complete the good work that we've done on SD Drive extension, and I think it's really our top priority for the STPDA program. So if they want them in numerical order, I would think Wilson Park multi-use path, then the Westbrook feasibility study, and then the other, and then Rogers Road third, bicycle loop fourth.
Okay.
Bowling Creek Greenway, South Greensboro Sidewalk, and Bell Arbor Plantation.
Great, thank
Acres
you.
Acres Path.
Excellent.
In that order. Is that your motion?
That was my motion.
Okay. Is it seconded?
It was seconded.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much.
Thanks, you.
All right. Are there any additional items from the staff? No.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy
one
Thanksgiving,
and all to Carborough.
Everybody. Is motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Great holiday.